pulling back the curtain of silence
and learning what freedom feels like. I'm Nick.
And I'm Lala. This is Seen, Brown-Eyed Activism.
Healing at the intersections.
Lala, I'm sensing that we are approaching this conversation from very different places.
Yeah.
How do you feel as we're talking about interracial partners?
Yeah. feel weird when you say it like that.
Interracial partners.
I don't know. I don't think there's a ton of emotional charge around this for me. I'm chronically single.
Sorry. I shouldn't laugh like that. You just like cry chronically.
I don't know. I'm just always single. Does it make it sound like a disease?
Yeah.
I actually love it. I'm actually, anyways, this is neither here nor there. Let's get back on topic. Yes, I'm coming into this from a different position. Mm. All of the great loves of my life are friendships, which for me have been extremely intimate, and some of them are very romantic or have been romantic. So I have my own perspective on it. But yeah, I don't know. I'm feeling really open to the conversation. How are you feeling?
Honestly, when I was thinking about this, I was super gung-ho. I was like excited about it because I'm like, we're going to talk about some shit that I like. You can do research and you can also just talk about things from the heart. But then I started to feel so self-conscious about it. I don't know. And so, yeah, that's kind of how I'm entering in the conversation, is recognizing that it made me feel really awkward. It was really clunky to write, like to program the episode. I was thinking about it, and it was so hard for me to write and to come to this place where we're actually sitting together now.
Right.
Mentally, I didn't know how it was all going to pan out. So hopefully I'll like this shit.
Yeah.
and if you don't, well, blame it on my motherfucking nerves. But I think it's, for me, recognizing the discomfort that I was feeling as I was preparing for this episode is important. Yeah. So many of us folks of color date white people, are in relationships with white people, have intimate partnerships with white people, are friends with white, you know, all of these kinds of relationships.
Right.
So I think it's, I'm walking into this trying to be mindful of how sensitive I am to this, and hopefully other people will feel hopefully validated, or maybe I'm just going to sound real nuts. That's fine too.
We will find out.
But we will find out.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so starting from one of the reasons why I think talking about dating white people, being in relationships with white people is uncomfortable, is because we know that forces such as white supremacy are real. And we know that they play out in our lives beyond, you know, black folks interacting with the KKK in some place in the States. You know, white supremacy plays out in very insidious ways in institutions and structures and systems and in our daily lives. So it seeps into what we see as natural, what we take for granted, from what we define as beautiful to our understandings of what good relationships look like, to how we see ourselves, to how we choose our partners, our friends. Like, it's all there. Yeah. Even though we don't know it, it's motherfucking there, like it or not. And it can feel, for me anyways, it feels really uncomfortable to talk or to think about who I've chosen to spend my time with in the past, because we're not just talking about who you're currently like sleeping with right now or who you're currently dating now. It's like, we're talking about this in bigger kind of in its entirety. And so when we start getting into who we share life with or who we choose or those kinds of things, it can be tough to talk about that shit because there's history and there's time and there's effort and there's emotions and there's attraction and all those things that come into who you choose to be with, right? So it's very complicated. So on our podcast, we're interested in understanding how we're both seen and how we see ourselves. But if I was to be honest with respect to the way people view my own interracial relationship with my white partner, I honestly couldn't give a flying fuck. Like, I don't like the idea of allowing what other people's perspectives of my relationship are to get in my relationship. And I'd say that because that was the impetus for me even writing this, like thinking about how awkward I felt. I was like, well, I don't want to talk about how other people see my relationship. I don't want to think about that because, like, it's just us. You know, we do so much individualizing when we're thinking of relationships. It's like, I'm the one into it, so who cares what y'all think? But I would say it's also really helpful for us to have like a barometer check and see whether the things that we take for granted in our relationships are things that we should be having our spidey senses going, oh, that's not okay. Having these conversations like we're doing very publicly in a podcast hopefully encourages folks of color who date white people to think a little more critically about what that's doing for them.
Yeah.
How are you feeling?
Yeah, I'm feeling okay, but I want to pause for a second just because there is a lot of baggage around interracial relationships and black-white relationships most of all. And it makes sense that you'd be affected by it because, you know, you say, like, you don't give a flying fuck what people think, but then you also feel defensive exactly. and self-conscious. So, like, obviously it affects you.
I hate you. That you're a therapist sometimes. Let me say what I want to say, Premal.
I know.
Let me live my motherfucking
life.
I
know, but it's, like, it's so natural. Like, yeah. We're all interconnected. We're social creatures. Totally. Like, you can't not be affected by other people, right?
100%.
And by all these ideas and...
isms and, you yeah. know, truisms and... Yeah.
Exactly. So it makes sense that there's... defensiveness or self-consciousness coming up for you. So I'm just wondering if you would want to say a little bit about, like, what are the assumptions or prejudices or whatever else that might be contributing to those feelings for you, and, like, who are they coming from? Like, whose gaze are you
thinking about or aware
of
the most? That's a good question. That double consciousness is something that W.E.B. Du Bois talks a lot about, where it's like you're aware of who you are as a person and you're aware of how other people perceive you, right? And sometimes how other people perceive you becomes so much more powerful than how you see yourself. And that's where I'm saying I don't give a fuck, because I'm like, I'm aware of the kinds of conversations where it's like, well, how can you, for me as a black woman, how can you really love black people if you don't date black men or how you don't, you're not with another black person? Conversations where we dial down and say, like, if you are not with a person who's also of color, your politics are null and void. And I find myself feeling, recognizing that those kinds of perspectives, I understand where they come from, right? Because it comes from a protectiveness of black culture, of black love, which has had an assault on it for time immemorial, right? From yeah. slavery till now. So I'm aware of those things, but I'm also kind of like middle finger up, because I'm like, I hope that we focus more on not what does the person who you're with look like, but are you finding joy and love and fulfillment in the relationship? Do you know what I'm trying to say?
I do. And I think that's really important. And I think, yeah, it's a really important point that a lot of that's coming out of a protectiveness and a love. But I also think that there is another part of where it comes from. And that is that a lot of people of color who are in relationships with white people do make a lot of excuses for their
yes.
partner's racism,
yes.
right?
Yeah.
Or they do try to apply, like, kind of a colorblind, you know, approach of mm-hmm. like, I'm going to bring my partner into this, like, POC
space
and, you know, you shouldn't care because they love me. And it's like, okay.
But how does that make that other people around
yeah,
you actually
what,
feel,
yeah.
you know, what by you taking that person in who you say loves you, who's to say that how that person feels about everybody else? I think that's kind of...
Or how they impact everybody
yeah,
else. Yeah,
yeah,
exactly. And so I think that those of us who do have very close, intimate relationships with white people, we need to listen to where some of those criticisms come from.
Exactly.
Because I don't want to be the person that's, you know, making excuses for somebody because I love them and I'm scared to
and that's the
take
thing.
The risk.
It totally comes
right?
from a place of fear for sure, right?
Yeah.
Like you're scared of
what if they don't love me anymore?
What if that person's saying is true? Even just
yes.
even just entertaining it enough to like let it sink in and sitting with that uncomfortableness and
right.
recognizing like where if it's hitting you all wrong and you don't like it, like where is that hitting you, like why? And then like now what are you going to do with that, knowing that feeling, identifying that feeling, because it means you're reacting to something that is maybe true, maybe
yeah.
resonates in some way, you
right.
know what
so
I'm
that
saying?
Fear of being judged, and then the fear with the white partner mm-hmm. as well,
what
of, like,
to
I'm
your
afraid
relationship.
To hold them accountable, I'm afraid to be honest about
yeah.
their racism, or I'm afraid to call these things out because 100%. I'm afraid of what the risk to the relationship.
Yeah,
so I think these are the things that we need to confront
100%.
If we're people with politics who are in relationships with white folks,
for sure.
Yeah,
yeah. And I just want to acknowledge, I think, like, in case you haven't been able to figure out, my entry point into this conversation is completely imperfect. I don't ever claim to be the arbiter of what it means to have the best interracial relationship or whatever.
Right.
Like, that's not
yeah.
where it comes from. It truly comes from a place of recognizing that, you know, most of my partners have been white men. All of my partners have been white men.
Yeah.
What does that mean? And so we're going to talk a bit about that. But I just want to put that out there that it's not about being perfect. We don't have perfect relationships, and it's a natural, completely natural thing to feel uncomfortable as people of color to talk about these things because they're so close to our heart. We, you know, have friends, family, loved ones that are white people.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think it's like, I hope that we would enter into this conversation with a lot of love and compassion for ourselves and with as little as possible sense of judgment of ourselves. Yeah. I don't think it's helpful.
Yeah.
It's not, it hasn't been helpful for me because, like, Lord knows I've been trying to put this shit together and I've been like, this is a struggle. Yeah. And it's because of the judging and thinking, like, what if I write this? What about that? And, like, going back and forth in my own head. So
totally. And that's, like, always a space that we are trying to create with this podcast with each other, is that it's messy and it's uncomfortable and it's things that, you know, might bring a lot up for us that's difficult to look at, but we just want to have the conversations, right? And
yeah,
we want to do the work. So that's what we're trying to do.
Absolutely. Yeah. So when we first talked about having this conversation and doing this episode, both of us were excited. Why were you excited about having this conversation?
There's a lot to say about what it takes to have intimate relationships with white people that are actually, like, really supportive and fulfilling and free and, like, equitable. Mm. You know, as a woman of color who's working really hard to unlearn white supremacy and who has, I hope, good politics, we put up with so much.
Yeah.
We do make a lot of excuses and we let a lot of shit go.
Mm-hmm.
And we're just so used to it. And I really want us to challenge that.
Totally.
Yeah.
No, for sure. And one of the things that I recognized in myself that I mentioned earlier is my track record has been mostly dating white men, only dating white men. When I look back at it and I recognize that it's for a long part been a result of internalized anti-blackness, it's pretty uncomfortable.
Yeah.
So I guess I'm curious for you, like, what's your track record? What are, like, do you, give me your receipts, because I'm going to be sharing a lot of shit on mine.
I don't know. I really don't date that much, honestly. So I've been involved with people of all different races, fewer white people in more recent years, but yeah, majority would be white men. I feel like my background of being, like, growing up in rural BC and being raised by white people, it made me feel more comfortable in those social groups when I was younger, which is weird when I think of it now, because, like, I did not feel at all comfortable in those social groups.
But it's familiar, perhaps, maybe?
Yeah, exactly. It was, like, a discomfort and, like, a pain that I was familiar with. So I definitely always really wanted to be with people of color, but it was harder for me to find those connections when I was younger for, like, a lot of different reasons. So, yeah, majority white men, but I've dated different genders.
Yeah.
And, yeah, as I've gotten older, more people of color.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, for me, I feel like over the past maybe 5-6 years, I've had this awakening almost where I've been able to identify and name how anti-blackness has affected me, like how I've internalized anti-blackness myself. For the longest time, I remember when I was younger, especially when I was in high school, the gold star of attractiveness was white dudes. And I would always, no, it's so true, because I went to a really small Christian school. So whenever there was, like, a new white dude, we'd be like, that's a new dude. Because I'm telling you, our class sizes were 40 people. So you, like, right, whiteness was privileged because there was not that many white people. And then when a white dude would come in, you'd be like, is he cute or not? And we would make, you know, mountains out of molehills about these boys. Right. They were not that cute.
Yeah, sure.
They were really not that cute. But I think the point being is that shit carried it. Like, I carried that shit until undergrad, when I straight up joined a sorority and, like, was sleeping with, like, frat dudes. You're cringing.
Yeah,
I'm cringing too.
It's
deep in her heart.
She
felt that. But yeah, like, it wasn't until undergrad where I was in spaces where there was so much more diversity. There was tons more black folks that I was not even just going to classes with, but, like, interacting with on a day-to-day.
Right.
And I remember feeling when I would get, like, approached by black men, like, other students, I remember this strong feeling of, like, I don't want to be associated with this person. I remember that feeling. I remember feeling like, I don't want to be where all the black people are. And it was from years and years and years of, if you ever ran into a black person with your friends who were not black, they would say things, for me anyways, they'd be like, do you know that person? That person, is that person your friend? Is that person? Of course you know that person. And it was like this running joke almost that, like, to be a black person and to know another black person was like a funny haha thing, which is also, it is funny haha because the city is so fucking small and chances are you motherfucking know that black person. Looking back, I should have been like, exactly. But when you're a kid, you feel so different. You feel so othered, right? So I remember feeling like all I wanted was, like, to be as aligned with whiteness as I possibly can, which is hilarious. Because the truth of the matter is, and one thing that I've learned for myself is, no matter who you date, no matter who you sleep with, no matter who you partner with, no matter any of those things, like, that doesn't make you any less black, Nicole.
Yeah.
Like, your blackness is still intact. Your racialization is still intact. And I think it got to the point where I started to think more about how I was being perceived, like how other people were perceiving this relationship, that got me like, oh God, I don't want to be that person that is only caring about pulling up with my dude. That's not the person that I need to be. That's not the person that I want to be. Where is that coming from? And yeah, truth be told, it was one of those things where it's taken me 5 or 6 years of identifying anti-blackness inside of myself and then being like, how do I want to play this out? How do you want to feel about yourself, Nicole? Because at the end of the day, it's how you feel about you. It's not about black men. It's about how I feel about me. Yeah. You know?
Yeah, it just makes so much sense that if when you're younger, anytime you're around another black person, it's like there's this increase of anti-blackness. When you're young and you're not old enough to understand what's happening and have, you know, politics around it, that you would just try to avoid the thing that brings on more
attention, and it feels like it's negative attention.
Yeah.
Or whatever. And like, yeah, my track record, I mean, I remember my first crush was a little white boy named Josh. He wore way too big cargo pants and he was like such a mischievous child. I remember thinking like, that is cuteness. That is what's attractive. And I'm wondering if you, if there was any level of internalizing anti-brownness for yourself. I mean, you were raised by your white family. So I guess I'm curious about what your experiences were imagining or thinking about partnership or dating.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't remember like the first crush I had or the first crush I had on a white person being raised in rural BC. Like, yeah, almost everyone was white. So like, of course I had crushes on white people. It's like there's no other option essentially. So, I mean, there was like one or two kids of color in my class, usually, sometimes I was the only one, but there probably was a little bit of that feeling, that kind of same feeling of like, we're naturally associated with each other and maybe you don't want to like encourage that.
Mm.
But there was just so few options. Like I'm thinking of literally maybe two people of color. Right?
Yeah, that's
so
fair.
So I'm like, yeah, I don't like, they're actually, it's not that there was a connection that I was resisting or anything.
It was
like
you had so few opportunities. So
yeah. So I think I probably would have had more of those similar feelings of not wanting to be like grouped together and associated and stigmatized in that way. It's just that it didn't come up as much because there was no other option. I don't remember thinking about the people I crushes on being white, but that also could be a function of being raised by white people, and I don't know, that being normal or not understanding kind of the implications of interracial whatever.
Yeah.
I don't know.
We're different.
Yeah.
We're real different.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I asked that because for me, so much of the trajectory that was set out from when I was a kid came from recognizing that like being white or being with white people was the more desirable thing to be or to do than with other people of color. Mm-hmm. And so
Get messages from your parents around?
Not at all.
Okay.
My dad was essentially like, you're going to go back to Kenya and you're going to find yourself a Kenyan husband. Like that, it was not a conversation. It wasn't a conversation. Yes.
That's so funny.
You're going back home. You're going to go back to where I met your mom and you're going to find yourself a husband there. But then I think for me, there's the added layer of like, my dad's a black man and that's the only black man that's had a significant role in my life. And our relationship is really strained. And so there are so many things that I started to attribute with black men through my dad and his example of being like the person that he is, that it almost made me do an about face to wanting to pursue black men because there were traits in my dad that I attributed to like, okay, y'all are pretty fucked up about this shit, right? And if you don't have other examples of what healthy masculinity might look like, for example, in black men as a black woman, I think it's really easy for us to say, okay, well, I feel maybe unsafe, I feel maybe undesirable, maybe I feel all these things that then makes you think, well, where can I find those feelings that I'm not feeling? Or what gives me some power? Those kinds of things.
Yeah, and that's where there's layers upon layers too, right? Because of structural anti-black violence in Vancouver, there is such a small black community here. And then at that time, especially, you weren't seeing examples of different black masculinities in media,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah, so that's like healthy it's like the black masculinities.
Exactly.
Yeah, like I was seeing representations of blackness.
But very specific ones.
Exactly,
yeah.
Absolutely. So I'm curious for you, Lala, like in our conversation right now, what in your mind really matters? What are some key things that you believe we need to consider and think about as people of color who are in partnerships, relationships with white people? What is the thing?
There's so many things. I think we need to think a lot about power.
Yeah.
It's there. We have to admit to ourselves that there's no neutral space. Power comes with us everywhere. So we need to deal with it consciously. We need to make ourselves aware of it. We need to think about how power affects how we express ourselves or how our partners express themselves. We need to think about who ends up shouldering more of the burden of connecting across our difference.
Mm.
We need to think, like, what about myself am I leaving out because I feel like there might not be space for it? What are the risks I'm afraid to take? Where am I afraid? Where am I silent?
Yeah.
Where am I censoring? Yeah.
I want to pull apart all those things.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things you just said was, are you tucking away and hiding away parts of who you are so that you make yourself more palatable for your partner? For that white person who holds structural power in their whiteness. For myself, in past relationships, I was so keenly aware of how I needed to mitigate or minimize or be deferential about my blackness.
Yeah.
You know, certain things that I would have to, quote unquote, like, let slide, or conversations that I thought, this is just going to be too much of a hassle. This person's just not going to get it. And I put up with those things. Like, you know, I was young. But at the same time, that resonates with me a lot. The idea of what opportunities are you forgoing because of that white partner who you're fearful of saying certain things in front of, or you're worried that that person's going to judge you if you were being honest about how you feel about your dynamic.
Yeah. And I think that we're kidding ourselves, honestly, for people who think that none of that's happening in their relationships with white people. I would really challenge people to take a closer look and think more about it, because So Mal is my person, and we've done so much work over a really long period of time in terms of trying to figure out how her whiteness impacts our relationship and how it's been harmful and how we can shift things. So our relationship, it's the best one in my life in that work.
Mm-hmm.
And it's come such a long way. And we shared some episodes of our podcast with her a bit early. And she told me, listening to me in this setting, talking to you, and specifically when we're talking about white people and white women, that she heard a side of me that she didn't know, that she heard a freedom in the way that I spoke to you about it,
yeah,
that didn't exist with her.
Mm-hmm.
And so she was really grateful to get a window into that.
Mm-hmm.
But it was interesting because as much as I knew, I think I said in our pilot episode that this, you know, you and me, this is one of the few spaces in my life where I do feel completely free, that I don't have to censor.
Mm-hmm.
But I still was surprised. Like, I didn't think there was anything about what I would say or how I would say it that she wouldn't have experienced.
Right.
Because we are so close. And
right.
I feel like I just say every thought in my head to her.
Yeah.
But it is different because there's things that I don't weigh out how I say it.
Oh, yeah. Well, there's things that we know we don't have to explain, perhaps.
Right.
Too, right? Yeah.
And I just think that people maybe are too quick to dismiss how that impacts their relationships with their white partners.
Right.
Because you maybe don't realize, and I haven't realized, how much that weighing of how do I say this in the right way and how are you going to feel about this does change me and does change the conversation.
Oh, totally. My partner, Nolan, we've been together for 5 years, and there's so many things that we're both, like, he's learning and unlearning. And from the beginning of our relationship, I was always like, for me, I just like couldn't tell how much was like sticking and how much was like not in general.
Yeah.
And so we started to just have more pointed conversations about race, and it wasn't something that I skirted around like very early on in our relationship or early on in our interactions. I was very like upfront about the things that I was like, this is a non-negotiable. Like, I have to be able to talk about these things. I had that classic conversation of like, when I come home and talk about and I have to vent about white people, what we're not going to do is be like, but not all da 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 da.
Yeah.
And like, that's a natural, I think so many of us have to have that. And if you haven't had those conversations with your white partners, like, you have to have that conversation with your white partner and let them know that like, what they're not going to do is police the way that you're talking about microaggressions, because they're really real things. So anyways, I just think it's really, I'm listening to you talk about this and I'm kind of comparing how I'm feeling in my relationship, where I feel like it's been one of the places where I can express the fullness of my blackness, which is been incredible for me. But then there's still obviously things that are like works in progress where you recognize, like, I want to have more in-depth conversations about the things that you and Mal talk about with each other. But I think that there's a difference in that relationship because there's so many more years of friendship and so much more active engagement on Mal's side, right? Like, she's actively doing the work. And that's not to say my partner's actually doing some work, but it's different work. Like, it depends on how much you want to dip your toes into it. You know what I'm saying?
Yes, absolutely. And I think, you know, I met Mal when I was 17 and she was 19. And early on in our relationship, I could talk to her about my experiences with other white people.
Yeah.
And she was supportive.
Right.
But what went completely unaddressed in our relationship until, I don't know, 5, 6 years more or
yeah.
more than that was the ways that her whiteness impacted me.
Right.
The ways that things that she did, some of which were very subtle and some of which not so much, how painful they were to me, how much they impacted me. That was something that I carried and didn't have at times the language and didn't feel safe enough. And at times, you know, I can remember things happening where she might say something and my energy would sort of change. And I remember one time her, you know, getting really defensive and being like, you know, obviously I didn't mean it like that, you know, and Mal was very like, she's the least hostile person ever.
Yeah,
so for her to kind of get mad was like such an extreme reaction in our relationship.
Yeah.
You know, or other times where it seemed like my reaction, I became the bad guy because I didn't react very well to something.
Mm.
Whereas like looking back, it's like, well, yeah, because what she had just said was super racist, but maybe I didn't have language to explain that. And she didn't know that at the time, right?
Right.
And then it took years for the conversations that we had, because then you start having the conversations about this thing you did harmed me. And then it took years for those conversations to actually get easier and better.
Yeah.
And for her to do enough work on her own that she was able to make space and not hold on to an idea of her innocence or her intentions or whatever else, right?
Right, because at the end of the day, the outcome is oftentimes more important than the intention. Like, just because you said it and you didn't mean it in a way that was harmful doesn't necessarily mean that it wasn't harmful for somebody.
Yeah, you know? And so, and her, you know, her whiteness still comes into the relationship sometimes, and sometimes things still happen that are harmful.
Yeah.
But she realizes it faster. You know, I'm able to talk about it more and those conversations have become so much more productive. But we're 14 years in.
Right, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. So recognizing when, like, the power is at play. It's always at play.
Yes.
It's the degree to, and the extent to which it is playing out in the way that you interact with that person or share with that person or do life with that person that really is going to be the barometer for, like, why are you in this relationship?
Yeah,
you know?
Like, you should be talking about it. If you're not talking about it and if you're not having difficult, painful conversations where a lot of, like, real deep emotions are coming up, I don't think you're doing the work that needs to be done.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, that's totally fair. So for me, I guess this conversation is sort of stemming from, you know, what's the one thing you think that folks should think about? that's good. You just gem dropped all that. For me, one of the things that I think is super important for us as we engage and date and marry and whatever white people as people of color is why. Like, why are we not? And this isn't to say, like, why would you do that? Like, not in a place of judgment. I just, but like, why are we selecting white partners?
Yeah.
Like, why are you dating a white person as a person of color? It took me a long time to even begin to feel comfortable answering that question for myself in my own head. For example, am I dating this white person because there's something about their whiteness that I enjoy or I feel benefits me? Which, you know, you see how white people get to live their lives free of lots of, you know, the degradation of racism and other things?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's kind of attractive to a lot of us.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's hard out here. So is that one of the reasons, or that you're compelled to sleep with white people, date white people, that kind of thing? Am I dating this person because I care for them and they care for me and there's mutual respect and love and this person is white? I think they're it's a difference.
Yeah.
And I don't necessarily think that it's like it's one or the other. I think there are so many things that are interlinked, right?
Sure.
That make you attracted to a person or intrigued by a person or whatever. But we're no longer allowing ourselves to use whiteness as a marker for more worthy or more attractive. I think that's something that we should be comfortable at least addressing in our own heads and making peace with. As a person of color, am I dating a white person because it gives me proximity to structural power? I get to walk down the street and then I don't have to worry too much about this or that.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think there's what we're doing consciously.
And then there's the other layer of shit that, you know.
Yeah. And I think that our conscious minds are the tip of the iceberg. Really.
Totally. Yeah.
So I think implicit bias is a really important conversation. And that's something that we talk about a lot with people in power, like the implicit bias that white people have towards people of color. But we all have it.
Yeah.
Is the thing.
Yeah.
Because we're
white supremacy is all around us.
Exactly.
It's insidious for
so
sure.
So it gets into all of our systems. And so have you ever taken one of those implicit bias tests online? There's like a Harvard site where you can take a test.
Send me the link later.
I will. And, you know, like your results might surprise you.
Oh, no. I want to know, but I also don't want to know.
And these are things that can be changed over time if you do the work, but you have to be open to finding that work for yourself and not just kind of thinking,
that's a no-brainer. That's a no. I don't date white people because I don't want proximity to power.
Yeah.
Like it's, yeah. And again, these questions are things that we should be interrogating ourselves with over time and not just here and now in this conversation.
Noticing
things, like noticing who our friends, what our friends even look like, what's the makeup of our friendships. Do you feel more comfortable being around, as a person of color, being around white people than you do around other people of color? For a long time, that was me, who was like, I'm going to seek out white spaces at the expense of me being around other people of color because I don't want to be that person. I don't want to be that black person who's with other black people doing black people things and people always pay attention and that's just like, you know.
Yeah, I feel like so many Indian men will say that they only date white girls because brown girls are just like, oh, they're so traditional and they don't, you know, they just want this and this. When like I'm the one, I'm into, you know, all these other
sorry,
cultural
I'm like,
things.
I can't. My mind is like, I can't.
It's so dumb, right? But then there's also so many Indian women who say the exact same thing, that they only date white men because of, you know, the same reason. And
exactly.
It's like, okay, but then how does this make sense? Like there's like a documentary, Meet the Patels, that I feel like was
I saw that.
I felt like it was like this exact thing. It was just, anyways, it was that exact problem of essentially like making white people individuals and your own race
as
this,
like,
monolith,
right?
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. And like internalized racism will have us all, people of color, believing that like dating a white person or being with a white person is like the end all be all best thing that you can be.
Yeah.
And like, let's not get that shit fucking twisted, because that's not true. That's actually quite harmful for us.
Yeah.
Right. Even if we are with white people and we benefit from things like having more, you know, access to power and proximity to power, it's still not good for us.
Yeah.
It's still harming us.
Yeah.
Even if we don't recognize it is, it is.
Yeah. That proximity to power, like, that gets you in harm's way too, right?
For sure. And like, just the continuous, like I said, interrogating of yourself and your decisions and who you spend your time with, and recognizing like what patterns you notice, like we mentioned before. The pattern piece is, I think, really key, because it's like, it's not just about who you're dating right now. This person that you're with right now might love you the shit out of you, but what's the whole trajectory of your life?
Yeah.
You know, where is this taking you? Where have you been brought to get here?
Yeah. And if there's a dissonance between the patterns of your life and what you consciously believe or what you consciously think that you value, okay, like, it's time to interrogate that dissonance a little bit, figure out what might be having a say here, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, what might be getting into my system in a way that I'm maybe not completely aware of.
Totally. And so I guess now I'd like us to talk a little bit more about like how we can, as people of color in relationships with white folks, support ourselves, take care of ourselves. And one of the first pieces, I think, for myself is being able to engage in a more critical kind of love and recognizing things like internalized anti-blackness and recognizing things like that internalized anti-blackness is actually very harmful for me. It seems like it's this protective layer where you're just trying to not rock the boat, not be that black girl, not be, you know, not be too much, not do all those kinds of things. But what that actually does is chip away at how you can or cannot show up in the fullness as who you are. As a person, as a black person, as a person of color. So you deserve love. You deserve to be free and happy within your relationships. You are worthy of that joy and that happiness. I'm telling you this, but I'm also telling like myself this and all of us this is, there's nothing in my mind that's worse than being in a relationship that you feel is for other people. It's got to serve your purpose. It's got to serve you well, right? And so whatever that looks like, In my heart of hearts, that's how I feel, is that you better be in a relationship for you. And that doesn't mean you're selfish. That means you better be in it because you want to be in it, not because you think other people want or think that that is a good match or whatever society has told you is like the most idealistic thing to do. And you have it. You've ticked the box and here you are. It's like, but are you fucking happy?
Yeah,
you know,
I kind of think back to our conversation that we had in our episode Closer Than Kin, mm-hmm. where we talked about the difference between connections where they make you feel stronger and they make you feel freer, yeah. and they make you able to be more yourself, right?
Yes.
Versus the connections that make you feel like maybe you're crazy or maybe, you know, you have to censor or edit yourself, or you just have to change yourself in some way. Your relationship might inspire you to grow, but that's very different than feeling like you have to change because something about you isn't okay.
Yeah, for sure. Looking back at some of the people that I've chosen to spend my time with, the ones that have been the most harmful for myself have been the relationships that I wasn't able to show up for myself in the way that I needed for me because I was trying to take care of that other person's feelings or trying to make the other person feel comfortable. And these are all white people that I'm talking about.
Yeah.
And so looking back at that, I recognize that what's super hard for me is to identify, to speak out and communicate effectively about when I'm feeling a type of way with respect to racial interactions or like yeah. power. It's hard for me. It's not, we might know what the feeling feels like, but it's hard to like take the feeling and then identify the feeling and then tie it to words and then say the words and then and not fear repercussions or not fear rejection or not fear being gaslit or all those kinds of things, you know?
Yeah, and that's why I think it's really important always for white partners to never make you feel like this burden of proof that if race is at play, if you feel that race is at play or something was racist either in the relationship or outside of it, mm-hmm. that they need to be supportive. And if you are having trouble finding the words, they need to be patient. They need to not put the burden on you to be able to come up with them right away, because it's so easy to be gaslit by white people because, right?
Yeah.
They have this whole culture to back them up to say that your perspective is wrong and their perspective is right. And so if they are just like, well, you know, maybe you were just being a little sensitive. There's a level of power, an entire system of power comes into that.
Yeah.
And so they need to be really aware of their power. And then we always need to be very cognizant of when that's happening.
Yeah.
And have a hard boundary that's not okay. We're not going to play that game.
Yeah. And part of my mentioning having that critical kind of love is it's the opposite of unconditional love. Because yeah. I think sometimes we need to have conditions on how we want to be treated and how like we really should have boundaries and expectations. And as people of color, first off, like feeling safe. Like feeling truly safe. And of course, like in your conversations with Mal, like you've said, it's like 14, 13 years into a relationship and you're just looking back at seven years deep and thinking, oh, wow, there are certain things that I couldn't say then or that I wouldn't have been talking to her about. Right.
Yeah.
Safety takes time to build and trust. But I think the key is knowing that we're worthy of the safety and that yeah. trust isn't something that is this elusive thing. No. Like you should know when you're able to trust your white partner with those intimate parts of yourself. And if you don't have that over a course of time, we have to take a good look at ourselves and recognize like that fear of showing who I fully am, the fullness of myself.
Yeah. And I think a real key there is that we have to have experienced that in other relationships or else how would we even know the difference?
I think it's helpful for us. It's helpful for me to know how I love myself, to know how to explain how I want people to love me and how I want people to respect me.
I agree, but I also think it's really hard to figure out how you love yourself if you haven't experienced that in relationships.
Mm-hmm.
So, for example, like relationships with each other, like I think it's really important for us to be really connected with other people of color, both in our personal lives, having those relationships and being connected with the media, the activists, the writer, you know?
Yeah. Like things bigger than just the you and me's, but like the structural kind of bigger things.
Yeah, because I think that there's a lot of things that our white partners, they're never going to understand.
True.
Right?
Yeah.
Like they just can't. It's outside of their experience.
100%.
So
yeah, 100% believe that.
So if we're only investing in relationships with them, we might have no basis to realize just how real our feelings are.
Yeah.
Or how valid they are.
When we were preparing for this episode, we had talked about, I'm going to butcher it, but the frog in the pot with hot water, you know?
Yeah, it's this idea that, like, if the water is just very, very, very slowly increasing in temperature, you don't notice it.
Yes.
Until suddenly it's boiling and you're dying.
Right? Oh, morbid.
And so, yeah, but it's true. I mean, so if you spend all of your time in white spaces and around white people and listening to white people.
And white perspectives and white stories. And white,
then you get very desensitized to a certain level of racism. You accept a certain conversation. Whereas if you're spending more time talking to other people of color where you don't even have to like have that kind of 101 level, entertain that argument.
Right.
There's so far that you can go and you start to realize like what's possible, that there is ways of being for you or ways of understanding yourself or ways of understanding the world or expectations to have in relationships that you never would have been able to get to if you were stuck always having a 101 conversation with
my, you're totally right. And you're thinking again about your point about it's difficult sometimes for us to know how we should love ourselves if we've never been in relationships that aren't loving, for sure. Like if we've only ever been in spaces or arenas or in relationships where you have to come to the table playing down parts of who you are, it's not natural for you to, when you're around people who are like you or who are also of color, it's not like it's just like, oh, sweet, I know how to do this shit now.
Yeah.
You have to actually like learn how to be around other people of color. And that was something that I recognized for myself is like when I spent so much energy and time trying to be in white spaces and then comparing that to like actively unlearning anti-blackness and craving to be around other people of color, I recognized how restorative that was for me and how much I didn't even realize that I didn't know what I was missing.
Yeah.
You know, like you don't know what you're missing until you're like actually getting the shit that you need. And let's be clear, as people of color dating white people, we actually really do need to spend time with people of color. We need that shit. It's very important.
Yes.
It's very, very important.
100%.
100%. 1,000%.
1,000,000%.
1,000,000%. I also think that we can be mindful about things like emotional labor. There is a huge responsibility for white people who are dating people of color to go off and do their own work, to go off and teach themselves those things. Because let's say I didn't do gender studies and I don't have all this language to describe structural oppression and all that kind of shit. If I just come to the table and come to my relationship with a white person with my just day-to-day lived experience, I expect white people who I'm in relationships with to go off and try to understand how that's connected to things bigger than themselves, because I'm aware of how they are and who they are and how they take up space is much bigger than just them. Do you know what I'm saying?
Totally. And I think that's about, I mean, it's about so many things. And one of them is shared values. Like, I think it's important to try to be a responsible, ethical person in the world.
Yes.
I've got my hands full trying to do that for myself. Figure out how can I show up as the person that I need to be in the world to do the most benefit to the world and the least amount of harm. I can't take that on for a white person.
No.
That's the level of work that's required to be unpacking your power as a white person and figuring out how to show up in the best way that you can. I don't have time, do all that for them.
Yes.
So if somebody I'm going to be in a relationship with, I think, needs to share the value of doing that work for themselves.
100%.
Yeah.
And share the value in recognizing that it's an honor and a privilege to listen to the rage that comes from people of color, too. Like, when we share microaggressions, it's not just about, like, oh, white people are like, ah. Because sometimes it is. But other times it's about, like, you are in a space where you feel comfortable enough to actually be honest with what's going on and how things are harming you.
Yeah.
You know what I'm trying to say? So I think not only do white people have to hold space for us to share those microaggressions and rage and things like that, but it's on them to recognize how it's tied to like the other shit that they're also complicit in as well.
Totally.
You know?
Yeah.
For me, I'm also super curious about what we can be mindful of with respect to entering in conversations on race with white people and white intimate partners. As much as I expect my white partner to hold space for me, there's something to be said about recognizing that, again, it's a choice, but also we have to create space to hold uncomfortable feelings that they have too. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
What are your thoughts on giving the white partners that we have in our life the space to work through shame? Like, because what it is working through, not just like wallowing in it and feeling like, oh, I'm feeling sad and I want you to make me feel better about this thing you're telling me about your own experience. But
yeah, I think it's complicated. Mm-hmm. Definitely.
Yeah.
Because I think that what you're really getting at here is the fact that the quote unquote rules of engagement are different when it is an intimate partner.
Yeah.
Than it is like a coworker, an acquaintance, or an internet stranger or something like that, right? Mm-hmm. So with an intimate partner, and these are things that have happened with Mal. There's been times where there's an interaction that doesn't go well and there's a racial dynamic to it. And sometimes what's come up for her, it's related to childhood trauma.
Yeah. Okay. Like, right? Bigger things that are beyond you.
Because I think when this kind of shame comes up, oftentimes it is related to like that type of wounding.
That's like deep and older than, yeah.
Yeah. Because it's like, well, what is the part of you that feels so defensive or that feels not just like I have the capacity to harm someone or I have harmed someone, but that I'm an awful person or what is that?
Yeah.
So when I deeply love someone, I do care about what are those wounds that are getting in the way for you.
Right.
So I do want to make space for that and I want to hear about it. But when it's come out in a way where structural power is at play, that still needs to be centered. You know, me as
the
a person
of the
color,
matter.
How it has impacted me still needs to be centered.
Yeah.
We can never get away from like the harm that's been done.
Yeah.
And I think for me, a lot of times the shame then needs to be kind of processed and worked through somewhere else.
Okay. Like maybe we can talk about it here, but then it's like I need to go off and
do
your own
work.
Thing. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. I think a lot of the, and that's definitely been true for Mal, is that we've had a lot of conversations and we do a lot of work together. Mm-hmm. But I know that she does a lot more work around her whiteness away from me than with me. And
right.
That's very important to me.
That's a fucking beautiful thing. I don't even know what to say. Like, I was just like, whoa, fuck. I've never thought about that as working on your whiteness away from people of color.
Yeah.
On your own with other white people.
Yeah.
Or whatever it might be.
Yeah.
Or
a person of color if you're paying them.
Sure. Yeah. But like, yeah, that's key.
Like literally.
Yeah, but pay them.
Paying them.
Yeah.
Like if it's a therapist of color, great.
No.
If you pay them.
For sure.
But yeah.
I'm curious, in your mind, how do we know when we're starting to excuse bad shit? Like shit that's like, you know, the stuff that if we saw our friends who are with a partner putting up with something and be like, that's fucked up. You should do that.
Yeah. For one thing, I think that's where self-awareness really come into play, because I think we need to notice what it feels like in our bodies when we're being silent about something.
Totally.
Right? And we're having to hold something.
Yes.
And I think we need to be able to recognize that feeling for ourselves. And I also think this is where our relationships with each other are really key.
As in like with other people of color?
Yeah. Because right. I think like we need to be, first of all, like if I'm going to talk to you about an experience I had with Mal, I need to be able to tell you and not sugarcoat it to try to protect her or try to protect your opinion of our relationship.
That's so hard.
Yeah.
That's so tough.
Yeah. And like we tiptoe around each other.
Yeah.
Like you don't want to be the person to say
the thing about your partner, for example.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, oh, your partner seems to have some internalized, right? Like we're scared.
Yeah.
Even, and when it has nothing to do with power, if it's just sort of a mundane bad quality a partner might have.
Sure.
We're afraid to say that.
Yes. Oh my God, that's really true. We live in a society though that's like you're not supposed to talk about other people's partners. It's like a very
And people get very defensive of their partners, and I think, you know, that can be a good quality in some ways. Mm-hmm. We want to protect
loyalty is
our
an important great thing also
of course.
Too. Sure. Yeah.
But I think we need to at least have some relationships where all of that goes out the window. There's no sugarcoating. There's no tiptoeing.
Mm.
And we can hold space for each other, because maybe your partner did say something really fucking racist and it really hurt you.
Yeah.
Okay. That doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to leave the relationship. It doesn't necessarily mean that the relationship is garbage.
Yeah.
But we need to be able to be honest about the thing that happened. Right?
Yes.
Or else we're just going to be excusing it. We're not going to be giving ourselves the support that we really need.
100%. I think for so many folks, for me, thinking about that, there's the fear of your person, your friend, judging you for being in that. You know what I'm saying?
Exactly.
Like, it's like you're scared of how that person's going to think of you because they're like, oh, then why are you putting up with this shit? Like, that sort of thing.
And there is so much, like you said, there's so much baggage around interracial relationships and relationships with white people. So you're going to be maybe a little bit guarded. You don't want to be that person who's dating this racist white person.
Yeah, of course. Like, who wants to be, but who wants to be that person?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, no, for sure. I'm with you on that. I would like to wrap up by doing Women of Color of the Week. I'm closing my computer because I don't need motherfucking notes for this shit.
What's happening?
So it feels like a surprise birthday party where like this birthday girl is like in the room and didn't know that all her friends were gonna do like a flash mob or some fucked up shit like that. Also, never do that shit. Never do that shit. Yeah. Someone's gonna come through the door and do a fucking flash mob in the middle of the podcast. Yeah, probably. So our Women of Color of the Week, dun da da dun, is motherfucking Lala.
What?
I didn't write anything because I don't think I need to write anything. One of the reasons that it was so hard for me to have this conversation, I think, was because I'm like, first of all, you know me really well. Second of all, we've always had a really, really frank conversation. So there's no way that you can mince words when it comes to talking about this because it implicates both of us so much. And I think I always look to you, also off the cuff, every time we're like prepping for episodes, I'm always like, you're always so prepared. You always have your notes, you got your quotes, you got your, like, she does her motherfucking research. Not saying that I'm not prepared. I'm just saying we have very different, we come to the table bringing different kinds of things.
Yeah.
But one of the things that you always bring is candor and the ability to like hold space for me and show me what it looks like as a bigger, older sister.
Stop.
She's mad about that. As a bigger, older sister, about what I should, some of the things that I need to be thinking about when it comes to engaging with white people. Like, I think that's such I don't have, like, you know, I see you as a mentor in so many ways. And this is one of those ways where I'm like, oh my God, I'm going to make her cry. Woo, bitch.
My Capricorn Venus is so uncomfortable.
But her Lee Moon is like, give it to me, baby. Tell me I'm so awesome. And you are. You are super awesome. And I just want to say thank you because I think what you're doing for so many of us in keeping those standards here, like high up here for us as people of color, and making sure that we're not pandering, making sure that we're not making excuses, making sure, you know what I'm saying? Like, this is done out of love. I know it can come across as like, Lala's just be on her shit, but she's on her shit. But at the same time, she's on some really truthful shit, you know? Like, I think so many of us, like myself, I come to the table with like my baggage and so many things that I'm trying to unlearn. And you've done so much work when it comes to establishing what those boundaries are for how you want to engage with white people. And I think like, I'm learning so much from you, so yeah.
Oh my God, I love you so much.
Now you better make me your Woman of Color of the Week next time. There's high expectations.
Oh, I love you.